Becky. Thank you, Sharon. So our last speaker today is Dr. Michael Butler. Dr. Butler is the director of the Louisiana State University Center for Healthcare Effectiveness and Quality. He has previously served as the CEO of the LSU Healthcare Division and as its chief medical officer. Dr. Butler has also served as chief of surgery and subsequently medical director at Leonard J. Chabert Medical Center, where he developed a disease management program. He also served as chief operating officer and medical director for the Medical Center of Louisiana at New Orleans. In addition, he served as chief executive officer at South Louisiana Medical Associates. Dr. Butler received his undergraduate degree at Amherst College, his medical degree at Tulane University School of Medicine, and his management degree at Tulane University School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine. He completed his postgraduate training in general and gastrointestinal surgery, as well as trauma, in New York. Dr. Butler is a certified physician executive, and his board certifications are in surgery, quality assurance, and medical management. Dr. Butler is also a fellow of the American College of Physician Executives. He was named one of the top 25 minority healthcare executives of 2008 by Modern Healthcare magazine. Dr. Butler is also a father of two and is very interested in African American art and American history. Welcome.
Thank you. Y'all have heard a lot of stuff about medical homes today. And first of all, if y'all don't mind, when you get old and fat and you get hot, so I'm taking my coat off. See, we have a whole new definition of what it means to be buff. Big, ugly, fat fellow. So, unlike the usual definition of buff, it's a little, yeah, I'm buff, so you could be truthful and still use that word. Let me just take a couple of minutes. I have far more slides than I need to talk about, and that's going to kill you. So, what is it that you want to hear that you haven't heard this morning? What do you want to know? So, let's just take a couple of minutes, and you tell me what you want to hear. Yes, ma'am.
We're from New Orleans, so anything related to New Orleans, we're at Tulane.
You're at Tulane. Well, good. That's at our sister institution that helped do some of this stuff, so that's good. All right. Yes, sir.
Is there stuff on outcomes? We're launching ourselves into primary care medical homes. Is there enough data to tell us that the outcomes are going to be significantly, is the juice worth the squeeze, I guess that's the
exactly. Okay. I can tell you a little bit about that. Don't have much outcome data in here, but I can tell you anecdotally what we have in terms of outcomes. What else you want? So outcomes, New Orleans, yes.
Well, I'd say definitely you guys are the microcosm of health access issues. So I guess focusing on how you address all that,
okay,
and have access to begin with.
Okay.
You might have addressed this, I apologize, I came in late, but in any initiative, there's always pushback. So who are you annoying by doing this?
Well, I can answer that because let's just go through that. So we want to know about who am I pissing off. Okay, good. All right, we want to know what's happening in New Orleans. We want to know something about outcomes. Is the juice worth the squeeze? Yes, sir.
And then when patients go to the ER and they're discharged, if there's anything you do to try to get them incorporated into the medical homes instead of coming back to the ER.
Okay.
Depending on the situation.
All right. Yes, sir.
I know there's been stuff in Louisiana going on at the state government level, and I wonder if you could talk about
Well, that's good. Tell me
partnership
about
partnership with the state government, whether that's happened or not. Or
okay.
Maybe there's not. That'd be good to know.
Okay.
Do you see a role for home care in this?
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
And the usage of health IT other than the EHR medical.
Okay, because let me tell you the first thing. You don't have an EHR. So you can't do it without an EHR. We have a lot of IT stuff, but we don't have any HR. Okay, let me just go through here, and I'm gonna fly through this, so if you want the handout stuff, so you got some references and want to see what we did, then you'll have that. Medical houses, homes, and neighborhoods, because one of the things is that I want to make, points that I want to make. NCQA, why is that important? Everybody want to know why it's important? Because primarily the reason why this stuff doesn't get done is because there's people who need to get money, because you can only get billed. Physicians don't like doing this in terms of pushback because they get billed for that 15 minutes. They don't get paid for the coordination both before and after, and how do you do that? So part of that is going to be NCQA certification, I think, and that's the reason why we pursued it, and we have seven hospitals scattered over around I-10. in Louisiana that all of my hospitals has at least a clinic or a hospital that's certified at that site, that's NCQA certified. And the reason why we have that is because we believe that that's going to be the stamp of approval for the payers to say, you deserve that money for what you're doing in terms of coordinating and connecting people with care. So that's why that is. And that's part of the reason why you push back. Now, just to kind of put where I'm going with this in a nutshell, NCQA, you build a house. Okay, got that? See, distinction there, a house. What does that mean? That means a structure. That's like a building code. Or take it another way, it's like a restaurant. Okay, you can have hygiene, you can have cleanliness, you can have gloves and things and all that stuff, but that didn't tell you whether the food's good or not. Okay, same thing with a medical house. You can have the NCQA structure, okay, which gives you the possibility of having a medical home. It is necessary, but I would argue insufficient. Okay, neighborhoods. What that means is medical care, just like you and your, if your neighbor starts playing loud music, if they start throwing the trash, if the dog comes in your yard, then your quality of life is impacted by what's going on in the neighborhood. So not only the way I look at it, house is the structure, home is what goes on inside, and neighborhood is when you leave out of your house and what's going on around you. Why does it need to change? Okay, I'm gonna just, let's see. Here's all the stuff that y'all know about. American, I think, continues to persist in mythology. We're the best and brightest, and guess what? We ain't no more. Just get over yourself, okay? Here's where we are. We ain't even second or third, okay? So I'm gonna just look at that on the website, medical errors, you know, breast cancer, HIV, motor vehicle, you add them up, medical errors kill more people than all them three things together. Medication errors, why is that, you know, appropriate care, people get preventive care 50% of the time, chronic care 60% of the time, and acute-based evidence care 70% of the time. So there's significant gaps. All right, same thing, just different slide. This is another thing that we want to try to address, particularly inside LSU. Lag time, knowing what works and getting it to people, 17 years. Well, guess what? If you're one of them people with something wrong now, you may not be around for 17 years. You want that stuff now. So that's part of what we want to try to do, shorten that time cycle. Here's about adoption of information technology. Cost of care is high. This is where we're going to save money, I hope, in healthcare reform. Number one cause of bankruptcy. That's still true. Disparities. Again, this is all, you can get on the website, get the handouts. But again, these are all the things that important to address that we hope medical homes will play a role in. This is some of the stuff. Here's why I push back. Less time with patients, less interest in primary care. What I said, a lot of doctors are dying with what I call the death of a thousand cuts. Or as a medical director, things that used to drive me nuts, going from the parking lot to my office, you would have these episodes that people couldn't understand. Why is he grouchy? Why is he surly? Because between my parking spot and the office, there's about 15 people who just want one thing. Okay? And they go, well, I just wanted X. Yeah, but there's 15 of y'all. And it's kind of like when I attacked my mama when she'd come in from work before she could put a purse down. There's 20 things that, but mama, you know, and it's the same thing with this. So part of it is we're asking people to do a lot more with fewer and fewer resources and less time to do it. That's where you're getting the pushback. Again, here's all the stuff that contributes to this mess. And again, what should great care look like? I'm gonna just hit it real quickly. Well, that's surprising. I didn't know they did that. It's magic. What's that? rendezvous with Rama, any technology that's sufficiently advanced would appear to be like magic. JCHO, this is what they say care should look like. Arthur C. Clarke, that's the author who wrote Rendezvous with Rama. Institute of Medicine goals, here's what they say. IOM, here's what they say. Triple Aim, which is the one that I focus on because it's the easiest thing to remember. No, because it's three things. Improve the experience of care. For those of you who have been sick or had anybody with sick, again, don't be fooled by getting money to pay for it. Guess what? You can have money and all you want. The experience of care, when you have to be the connector, you have to be the coordinator, the chauffeur, the maid, and the wet nurse at home. Okay, the experience of care for most people is not so high. Okay, so you want to improve the individual's experience of care. It's also quality. Quality for most of what I'm talking about is medical outcomes. Okay, that's how I simplify that. Improve the health of populations. Okay, what are we doing to reduce the burden of disease, disability, and death in the groups that we serve? And reduce the cost per capita. Three things: reduce the cost, improve population health, and make you feel good about what you're asking people to go through, the experience of care, and making sure that they have good outcomes. Chronic care model, this is Bodenheimer and Ed Wagner, Puget Sound stuff, but again, here's the basic part of that. So these are all the things that we are having expectation. Again, focus on this slide, because this sums it up pretty good. We want to move from episodic to continuous relationships. We're going to go from acute care focus to chronic care focus, reactive to proactive, individual one at a time to thinking about it in groups, paper-based to electronic, computerized, going from solo to teams. And again, here's the difference. And earlier speakers emphasized something. Got to know the difference between a group and a team. It's not synonymous, okay, because groups, okay, is everybody shows up. This is a group. We're all in here. Okay, we're not a team. We're not a team because we have them assigned roles, responsibility, tasks, and shared expectations. And like you said earlier, what happens is everybody shows up in clinic and we think it's a team, but it's all these individuals doing their own thing. Okay, they ain't a team. So part of what you have to do for medical home is team building, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Consultation referral, random versus evidence-based. Okay, what I call that is the Miss Mary problem. The reason why this is an issue is because we don't have full capacity to do that. Everybody who wants to get a specialty referral cannot get it by the clock or the calendar in the time frame that they want it. We don't have enough slots to go around. So typically the way it works in most hospitals, you call Miss Mary, and if you know her, you brought her a donut or two or something, then your patient can kind of get in there, okay? If you haven't done that, well, you get in the line with everybody else. And this is no rhyme or reason. She could have a great day, she could have a bad day, person could have thyroid cancer or a hangnail. You know, that's not necessarily factored in who gets the appointment first. So that's why we're going to evidence-based referrals, and there's some of that in there. Caregiver relationship coordinated versus fragmented. We need to hardwire the connection so it's not random. Knowledge management. This is all that's key to what we have done. The same thing, quarterly forums, that sort of thing, to make sure that people understand what's going on, why we're asking them to do what they do. Sometimes it's kind of like, I don't believe in dealing with employees in the mushroom fashion. Keep them in the dark and feed them that special blend of stuff. You need to have them know what it is that they want them to do. Okay. Right up, there we go. Houses about elements and structures, home about internal relationships, neighborhood about external relationships. Okay, home definitions, I'm not going to go through that. Everybody has one. This ours is up here, relation-centered care between a patient and his physician-guided provider team, which supports the patient health and health care. Again, and y'all do realize there's a difference between health and health care. There's a difference between health care finance reform and health care reform. Everybody's been talking about healthcare finance reform. And yeah, we ought to do some healthcare reform too, but we're going to do healthcare finance reform, okay? Which are mutually accountable. That implies that the patients are our partners and they have a role to play in getting themselves better or worse. All right, medical home definition, we're just going to go through that. I'm not going to read that. But here's the qualities of the medical home, and everybody has some good stuff with that. But again, structure. Here are the things that I think are most important that kind of share most of these things: accessibility, continuity, coordination, comprehensive, physician-directed practice, quality and safety, and information technology. Here's NCQA process, 9 areas of focus, 30 discrete elements. And again, y'all have that stuff and you got it on websites and different things. And this presentation is available on the website, is on the APHA website. But I just want to hit on a couple of several things here. Annals of Family Practice, January, February, 2009. This is showing you of the implementation things that you need to be doing. Here's the things that have the most sort of benefit versus cost ratios to kind of keep that in mind. So that's one of the things I think you ought to focus on. Self-management, which is patient education. But basically what it is a measure of getting patients engaged. People do bad if they don't engage, and they do better if they do. That has a whole host of things with the relationship and the continuity that they believe in what you're doing and asking them to do. Second biggest thing is e-prescribing. I have a bunch of slides on that. I'll just show you that. This is the scoring system. You don't need that. But again, this is why I'm saying that this is very much technology related. 166 items total, but 46% are related to IT. Okay, so that's where the notion has come from. You got to have an EHR. We'll get to that at the end. All right, what we have is SMARTI, which is a shared medical record data infrastructure, which is consists of a clinical data repository, master patient index, HL7 interface, authentication and access control, that's for HIPAA. And CLIC, which is Clinical Laboratory Inquiry System, that it's more than that. It has a lot more stuff in it. You see that, but that's where it started out, so that physicians could see what was going on, okay? Let me just get that out the way with my little notes on there from my IT person to make sure that I say that and get this done. We have probably, across 7 hospitals, 300 clinics. We have about the same number of admissions as Parkland and all that, but we share this with amongst ourselves and also with community partners that have FQHCs and such in the community. So we have 21 external sites, 7 organizations outside of LSU, and more than 150, 200 clinics inside LSU. Partnered with City of New Orleans, partnered with Tulane, with some of y'all's work, St. Thomas Clinic, State Office of Public Health, Corrections, the 7 correctional facility sites in Louisiana, and all of that. So this pulls all that information. Basically, we put it up there. It's a health information exchange. Wouldn't call it a RIO, but we have agreements of data sharing, and we put it out there so that here's where it's valuable to the community. Most of the FQHCs will see a patient, do a test with us, because they'll send them, if you need an upper GI, you need a Barry minima, you need a scope or whatever, and again, Miss Mary shows up. In the olden days, call on Miss Mary, well, she's at lunch. She's out sick today. Well, you can't get the work. Well, call back tomorrow. This way, when those results are dictated and available, every one of our clinical partners can see it wherever they are. If you have come from another part of the state to go to New Orleans for specialty care, and they have done a procedure, that procedure will show up in this thing. Let me go over that. Okay, so it started from the concept of, we have an electronic filing cabinet. We have 6 programmers that deal exclusively with the results reporting. We have 6 that deal with the other reports in terms of quality management, and We have several people to deal with telemedicine. That budget is about $1.6 million a year, soup to nuts, okay, which is nowhere near the ballpark for an electronic medical record. Ballpark for electronic medical record for systems is typically well above something like $90 million, $120 million, whatever, depending on what you have to do with it. So $1.6 million a year is in people's reach. That's not beyond what you can do, and this is what we have done it with. Now, here's the thing that, again, Terry Cummins from Chicago and Ron Anderson from Parkland, I did a webinar for NAPH, and I consider them colleagues and friends, and they looked at me like I either had a third eye or a tail. Because I told them, I said, we got all of our hospitals NCQA certified in a year, and we didn't do any extra fund. You couldn't do that. Why are you telling us? Because I made them say, it's easy. Yes, I'm not telling them it's easy. It's not easy. You shouldn't have done that. They need more money. And I couldn't understand what it is, and I'll get to this then. Well, the reason why it was easy, because we did a lot of this stuff prior to medical home. We had the idea of the electronic filing cabinet. That started around 2000, 1999, 2000. So it just happened to have things that, oh yeah, we have this, we have this, we have this. We had disease management starting back 2000. So here's the care guidelines. Here are those things that are available. Then how can we link that to our electronic information system? So what I'm saying is, again, some of this stuff is going to depend on where you start, what you already have in place. You don't have to start from zero, and you don't have to throw things out that you're already doing. Again, here's basic stuff for NCQA certification. This is something I think you ought to pay attention to, and I think it's helpful to you. I'm not going to read it. It's on the website. Read the handout. But basically, you need a team of people. You need to read over the standards, and you need to do a survey of what you have already. That's important. And you need to sit down and discuss it and make sure everybody's clear on that. They got interactive tools and a free online workshop. Get that. That's just more technical stuff. Clinical data system. This is all of your demographic stuff and what the standards are. You want to meet them in a week. You want to have same day access. Whatever your standards are, you need to figure out what they're going to be. Make them clear. Put them on. That's part of the process. Data system, basic patient information, clinical data system. Now, the click stuff is all clinical. It's not business. It's not related to that. Let me just go in here and just show y'all some examples. Here's our patient summary page. When that comes up, Adam test patient. Here's, if you go across this top bar, that's all of the last lab works. You got blood pressure and how that's been trending. Pneumovax, whether you've been a diabetic or not. Microalbumin, all of that kind of stuff. So that comes up. As soon as that, you can print this up ahead of time, so when the nurses say, listen, so again, that's part of that 15 minutes. So before they come, we have this printed up, and the nurses kind of take responsibility for that. So that, doctor, here's what so-and-so needs. You have any problems with any of this stuff? And usually just to get them out your way, yeah, no, go ahead, that's fine. Send them on their way. When you scroll over this, this shows you the most recent lab work in that category, so like a quick look. This lets you know that you've got people that have been in more than one facility. This is what the results look like. Red is obviously your abnormal flags and stuff. And this is all, the other thing you'll learn to know is CLIA, because you got to deal with CLIA when you present results and where it comes from and that sort of thing. So you got to know about that. Here's a problem list that the doctors don't have to fill out at all. We pull it from the administrative database. Boom, here's your problem list. Okay? Here's the screening stuff, and if you click on that, you'll get the diabetes guidelines, Pneumovax and influenza status, so you get point of care decision support while you're doing it. Okay, here's your order sheet for your diabetes disease management, so they don't have to hunt for it. If it's in red, that lets you know like it's either out of date or bad level, and you can check off all that you need, sign one paper, and the nurses make sure that the patients get that. Here's a patient that we gave everything to, and you have drop-down boxes about allergies, home medications, targeted immune status, asthma needs PFT, diabetes needs foot exam, eye exam, so you can quickly look on that and see what's going on if you have a whole, more than one condition. Now, let me just go back one thing here. We were working toward a medical home in our minds before there was such a thing as an NCQA medical home, and I'm going to tell you what way we were going with that. We had 5 core disease management programs: asthma, cancer screening, congestive heart failure, diabetes, HIV. We added chronic kidney disease. Okay, we approached it from an equity point of view. You know, why should these people with these 6 diseases get the coordination and attention that everybody could benefit from? What have we learned from that, and how can we do that? Because the other people need stuff too, and you can't keep, you know, what am I here, you know, people with blue big toe disease management. No, you can't keep doing that. That's dumb. Okay? So medical home was to take those things and weave it into a way that we can get the benefits of disease management too, a larger population of patients, so they're not being left out. And I really do think that's not normally the way we think of equity, but I think that is an important one, that you have certain pet projects and pet patients, and they get great care, and the rest of them get kind of catch as catch can, and that's not what we wanted to do. So that's why we were already moving in that direction toward a medical home, independent of what NCQA is doing. Immune status, foot exam, hemoglobin A1C, all of these different things, just showing you what we have there. Again, let me just hit on the language stuff. One of the things, I'm going to make 2 arguments for language services. Number one, I don't think a lot of people realize, not until I started paying attention to it, it's the law. You got to provide those people those services. You know, people think that it's kind of nice and having some 8-year-old preteen translate is satisfactory, and that was news to me, that not only is it good to do, but it is also the law, and if you screw up and don't provide it, they have grounds for suing you. So I want to make that clear, because a lot of physicians don't know that, you know, and they think that they're doing people a favor. Why didn't they bring a translator with them and all that? No, get over that, dude. You better provide one. The second part of it is a failure to recognize demographics. Contrary to popular belief, again, and I'm a contrarian in the sense that I follow certain kind of principles. Don't believe the hype. And the thing, this is God's revenge on me, because I quote Reagan almost daily. Droviev, no proviev. You know what that translates into? Y'all should know that. Come on, y'all are younger than me. Y'all, Helsinki Accord, 2, trust but verify. Okay, don't accept conventional wisdom. Find out what the real deal is. Don't believe the hype. Here's the deal. Most of the, quote, immigrant population everybody's bitching about, compared to our normal patients in public hospitals, have a high percentage of insurance. They come with money. So all of this foolishness now about we're scared that some poor indigent from south of the border doesn't have money. Guess what? More of them have money. Let me tell you something else. More of our immigrant-type patients are more interested in paying the bill. So you're being doubly dumb. You're going against the law by not providing the needed services. Number 2, you're running money out the door. Okay, this is your future population that you're ignoring or thumbing your nose up at, and that's not what you need to be doing. This is one of the things, electronic prescribing. This is how you get on. And here we have all of the allergies listed. Here are the drugs that they've had. Here's where you prescribe it. Here's how you, if you don't have all the stuff documented, here's what happens with that. You got to note whether you're pregnant or breastfeeding. Here's how you add allergies. And again, this is just how we do it. Reviewing the home medication reconciliation. We were too fast because Joint Commission pulled it out. You need to be resolved, have medication reconciliation. We fixed it, and then they said, oh, we were just kidding. You know, you kind of need to back off a little bit. But no, ours is in. We're done. okay? This is how you reconcile home with a, uh-oh. Here, let me get on here. Here's our special paper that's tamper-proof. That's part of the requirements. And again, here's the listing and how you refill them quickly so that you can get all that stuff done. But here's the thing I want to go down here. Here's how we look and judge performance across clinic. This is some of what your outcome studies. This is one hospital. Satisfaction, percent admitted time, aspirin on arrival. But we have disease management, percentage of hemoglobin A1C. For our population of diabetics system-wide, which is about 17,000, 18,000, more than 53% have hemoglobin A1Cs less than 7. Okay? And I got into it with what's his name from Utah, Intermountain Health. Y'all familiar with them?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I
can't think of his name right now. Well, we got, you know, we have 60% of our patients in Intermountain Health, diabetics, hemoglobin A1C less than 7. Okay, I got 57, 58 about in that range. Okay, this is Louisiana. Okay, I can get to 60 with skinny Mormon people who don't smoke. Okay? Rarely ever heard of Mormon food. Of course, I'm going to offend all the Mormons in the room. Okay, but again, you know New Orleans. Okay? That is no challenge. Okay? It don't work that way. So, no, I was not. But again, this is how we do, how we give providers feedback and so forth. And again, this is practice panel side. This is all in your handout. I'm sorry we kind of did this much too fast. Okay, this is how we do the referrals based on that's Terry Cummins stuff. Again, here's the thing about managing the transition in the neighborhood. This is the important part about the neighborhood part. You need structured information, capture, and communication, and you need to hardwire the connections. Here's what I'm going to send when you go to, when you get discharged. Here's what I'm going to send when you get operated. Here's what I'm going to send. So it's clear. It's in the same format. They know what to expect. They know where to find it. They know where to look on it. Well, I'm interested in this part. You know, they can go to it. So that's important part. Again, how does this all work in an organizational context? And again, this is the context in which we do these various things. See, now this is going to drive me nuts because it takes too long. And this is what healthcare effectiveness, disease management, and else. And again, we came up with this in 2000. Evidence-based guidelines, knowledgeable providers, engaged patient, actionable patient goals, medication assistance program. We got money at the state level some 10 years ago to buy drugs. They gave us, okay, here's $1 million, buy some drugs with that. Great, $1 million. That'll last about 2 minutes. Okay, so what we did was we had these partnered with pharmaceutical companies, and we identify programs that would give free drugs to most of our patients who are below 200% poverty that would qualify, and we provided that. And that comes out to about a $50 million pharmacy benefit package for our patients. Here's how we kind of do the thing that you were talking about to keep people informed, to go over the operational review stuff. That thing that I showed you one page of is about one page out of about 10. So about how you're doing clinically at each hospital. Philosophical point, focus on structure and system, not on the individual. Because again, people need the support, and many times the reason why people don't do well, when you focus on individuals, you get into the cycle of heroics and special handling, and that doesn't work good because you burn out. Okay, this is again about how all of these things fit together. Again, here's the quote I'm gonna leave with. This is my favorite quote beside the Reagan quote. And this is where I would tell you to deal with medical homes. And they attribute this to Arthur Ashe, but I haven't been able to get the original reference because this sounds much older than Arthur Ashe. Start where you are. Too much time we spend getting ready to. I'm fixing to. Just do something. Use what you have. Well, I need, it's like whoever raised children. I need a pencil. I want some water. You know, the light ain't good, okay? Just use what you got right now, okay? And number three, we focus so many things, particularly public hospital, we get into the victimology mode of we can't do it and we're poor and we're minority, and we don't have no money. Guess what? You do what you can do. Focus on doing that, and that'll be the thing. Read the slides. I implore you that. They got some great examples in there. But I hope I covered most of what y'all wanted today, and I'll be more than happy to take questions if you have any. Thank you very much.
Okay, now we have some time for questions if you haven't passed out from the heat in this room yet.
I was actually wondering, when patients leave the ER,
correct.
Do you get them set up with
We're doing something right now in the ED, and since you're from New Orleans, I don't know whether you know John Kalk or not. John is one of the ER honchos in terms of ER management, and what we do is we're doing a couple of things. We want to make sure that there is a kind of post-ER referral clinic to kind of time them over until they can get a true family practice, a medicine clinic appointment, or go to either one of the community care appointments. That's going on right now. It's not quite as hooked up and wired as I want it to be, but it's getting there.
So when you can I answer that question too for Parkland? What we're beginning to do is pull our frequent flyer lists for the emergency department, and we're actually contacting those families to try to understand more about what's going on with them that's driving that behavior, and then we're pulling them into primary care homes if that's appropriate. A lot of times you've got people circling in and out of your ED who they need a home in a specialty clinic. Maybe they've got cancer, or maybe they've got some sort of other disease process going on that's not necessarily appropriate for a primary care home, but it is appropriate for an oncology clinic or a renal clinic or something like that.
I have one of the slides that I skipped over is you can have a subspecialty medical home. We do that for HIV, the HOP clinic, okay? That I know that y'all are familiar with that, which is the HIV outpatient clinic in New Orleans at Medical Center Louisiana. But renal clinics and other kinds of things, congestive heart failure, all of those things can be a specialty clinic. And again, there's a negotiation with the physicians about whether or not they want to be a true medical home and meet all of the needs, or they want to be an adjunct. Like, look, we'll take care of this, but when it comes to something else, we're going to send it back to you. But again, there's some sense in doing that because most of the time, in a lot of cases, that CHF is primary, and that's what you have to really control.
I also just want to add one point, that of the survey that we did at NAPH, at the National Association of Public Hospitals, we found that about 30% of the programs, of the 41 or so medical home programs that are out there, do exactly what you were suggesting, that they focus in on the ED population and tie in patients from the ED into the medical home. Where's Paula?
Just thoughts about how you work physicians and training into all of this. You know, one of the key components to high-quality care, in my mind, is continuity of care. And we struggle so much with all the different actors that are in our internal medicine clinic. We have so many residents in and out of there. I mean, the basic nurse and attending physician team remains relatively stable, but even among our physician team, we have different hats that we wear and are in and out of there. So maybe some comments about when you're training 24 residents.
We've done it in a couple of different ways. One of which is clinic has become more stable as we've done more of a hospitalist model so that faculty stay either in the hospital for a significantly longer period of time and some stay in clinic for a significantly longer period of time. So that's part of it.
We've actually found that's a difficulty because we are very complicated patients, the 7 problem, 14 medicines where a person goes in the hospital and they do all this stuff and they pop back out and we don't know what they get. We're looking at it going, you do what?
Okay, but see, part of the way we solve that is with our information technology, with the structured information and communication, so that when you leave, again, this is the hardwiring of the relationships, and this is what NCQA is, like I said earlier, it's a house, not a home, okay? Because we have to negotiate with our people in the clinic, well, what do you need to know? Now, you can see what the discharge summary looks like. You can have a note, but we want to hardwire it even more so that I know when you're this attending and you send the person out, it's gonna, you're gonna know where you're sending them to, and I'm gonna know where it came from. So if I need more clarity, whatever, unfinished business, because again, that's a significant part. There's stuff that you start that ain't ready, but they're ready to go. And then part of it is what I hope will happen is we'll get in a relationship in such a way that I may be able to send them, you may be comfortable enough sending them out earlier because you know that they're gonna get appropriate follow-up. So we can shorten that length of stay from your 4.9, and ours is about 4.5, 4.4, which, you know, a little bit better.
What we're doing, and it works best right now with pediatric residents, because we've got a commitment from the pediatric chair that they're gonna have those residents work with us over a couple of years, which is challenge number one. You don't want to spin somebody in and out of there because you're not gonna get the same continuity result. Then we have the employed physicians, we have the teaming in place, which the resident simply becomes a part of that team and are paired with that particular physician when they're seeing patients in our environment. What we'd like to do and have not accomplished yet on the adult side is we want to do more resident teaching in the community clinics. Part of this we're going to try to address through the community-oriented primary care fellowship and try to generate interest across the nation in primary care, in implementing the community-oriented primary care concept, and hopefully interest UT Southwestern, the medical school that we partner with, in assigning the adult residents in a similar way that pediatrics does with the pedes, because we'd love to work with them, but it would be completely disruptive to have them spin in and out every 6 weeks. That they wouldn't get anything, the patient wouldn't get anything, and then our providers love to teach, but you know they don't get the same satisfaction as we achieve on the medical side.
And finally, I can actually add one more point to that. If you're interested in getting more information, Denver Health has a residency program at their hospital that is solely focused around medical homes. So I can give you my information. Or I can get yours, and I can put you in contact with that person to find out how they're working around residents and medical concepts.
Dr. Butler, you referred several times to handouts. Was that a figure of speech or a virtual
handout?
No.
The way they make us do it, as far as I understand, we put it on the website, and y'all download it, y'all click on it, and it'll print out.
Yeah, okay.
No, it's not. No, and again, and trust me, They made sure about 8 times that mine was up there, and it's long, but it's there. I tell you what, if I got my rough copy to make you happy, you can have mine.
Well,
just give that to him.
If anybody has any trouble downloading, please let us know on any page where we can facilitate getting the slides to you.
And I think I was going to say we might actually put it on our website if you're fine
no,
with that.
No, of course. I don't care.
Okay.
I have a question about healthcare finance reform or insurance reform.
Sure.
Is there anything either in any of the current bills to your knowledge that supports the growth of this model, or is there some other thing coming down the pipe?
Ask them. I have
yeah,
no clue.
Yeah, I commented on that when I spoke earlier, but let me tell you, the short answer is yes. There is. There's some language around medical homes explicitly, but NAPH has put in some language in the House bill and is working on getting it into the Senate bill, the House bill that passed last week, that includes language around setting up networks, collaborative networks.
I'm just hoping that it's not just for pre-30 clinics and FQHC clinics, because that would exclude all of Parkland's clinics. And so far, all the stimulus money.
No, actually, all the entrants are involved in this process. So no, it's explicitly looking at public hospitals as the center of the coordinated care network that reaches out to community health centers.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
I have a money question for the two health system people, which is, you know, you look at the sort of models that have gotten national attention, the group health and the Geisingers, and they've diverted significant resources into their primary care clinic system, and they're sort of self-funded, you know, insurance, so they can do that. But have you done similar things in terms of the amount of resources you're putting into the clinics to support the model, and have you gotten payers to pay for the services in those clinics differently?
Two things. One, the biggest expansion of primary care that was different is in New Orleans with the primary neighborhood clinics. And that was a LPHI, Louisiana Public Health Institute, got some post-Katrina funding to help jumpstart those clinics. Right now, we're subsidizing those clinics with, it's about to run out, and we plan on either subsidizing it with UCC uncompensated care dollars to the extent that we can, or transitioning them to making them truly community-based clinics with FQHC funding that way to take care of that. But in general, what it is in our system, what we've had to do was, you know, nobody gives us extra money, but what we've had to do is to really embark on a change strategy to say that we're going to deploy our resources differently. All of our disease management stuff have had minimal additional fundings. It has been a change effort by getting people to understand how you can incorporate these necessary things into your current practice. And then where we spend the dollars, which are precious, is like this IT stuff to support the structure. So no, there's not a whole lot of extra funding in there. It's been through redeployment of mostly current resources.
What we have done, we're spending, it's quite an investment because the primary care clinics don't pay the break-even payment programs. While I'm hopeful with health care reform that the payment revenue streams will be different and we'll start rewarding prevention and primary care rather than the high cost of care, but that's, I'll believe it when I see it. So our annual budget is around $55 million. Part of the presentation I didn't hit on this really hard was we've spent a lot of time, for example, I mentioned that we've trained all the providers, nursing staff, and business staff how to code. That early Epic implementation was all the business structure. We try to do the very best we can to make sure the information that we're putting in the system is going to be billable the first time. And over the years, that's been paying off that with our kids, they're mostly Medicaid or CHIP. We've got a lot of seniors in our system, so they're Medicare, though Medicare on the outpatient side is not that good, but it's something. And then what we've been doing, we haven't really added resources for all the time that I've been at CFNC since 1997. We've actually been becoming more lean and learning more about how do you recombine the resources that you have to make a broader, bigger difference. And with electronics, that's becoming more possible because I could see, you know, you could base a primary care medical home out of a church, for example. You know, if you've got the right communication network in place, you can start delivering care in surprising places and getting the results that you need to get with primary care and the medical home. So, we're trying.
Do we have time for one more question if anyone has one?
Go with one of the things, follow up on that, is one of the things that we do it, we approach the disease management thing a lot different, and I got a lot of pushback on that too, because everybody keeps talking about it going there, and this is different, and this is one of the things that I know that y'all do much better than we do in terms of community connections, and we need to do more of that in terms of non-healthcare organization, things like the Y and some other things that y'all are doing over there. And you know, people that are not traditionally healthcare, but again, this is back to your limited resources thing. Because you know, one of the things they wanted me to spend $1 million one year on, we need a mobile breast van. No. Yeah, but you don't understand, we got all these people in the community not getting their breast screening, and I said, stop. And we ran the numbers of people that were hitting our door every day, that were our patients, that were coming in. We didn't have to go look for them. And when we started out, now we're getting mammogram screening, 40% of the eligible women of, not 40% eligible, 40-year-old up are considered eligible for mammogram screening. The Healthy People 2010 standard is you want to have 70% of those should have a mammogram every 2 years, okay? I said, well, right now, when you're starting, you don't have to go look for them. We're at 50% inside. Okay, so why am I going to put $1 million on a bus that you can't standardize according to the ACR, American College of Radiologists? You can't get paid for because it's moving, so you can't get UCC or any other kind of money for it. And we're already not meeting the needs here. Now we can start talking about a bus because now we're doing about of the eligible women that we have over 40, we're doing about 75% system-wide have the two-year mammogram. And again, this is a population of which 50% have no coverage. Okay? Over across our system, 50% with no coverage. So when people tell me that the people are not interested, they don't want to come, no, that's bull. They come, and they come back for it. But now when you start having a clinic fee for the mammogram that you or the doctor referring them to, well then, yeah, you'll run them off. But if you have it in a way, you can get, we're up to, like I say, for the women 40 and over, we have a screening mammography rate that's approaching 80%. Okay? We're not doing as good on pap smears, which is every 3 years, we want it 90%. We're about at 70% of that. And that's not where I want to be. But again, this is what we've been able to do with that. If y'all got anything, I'm going to ask y'all a question. If y'all figure out how to beat blood pressure, please let me know, because that's the hardest damn thing to change, to try to get people to where they need to be in blood pressure. Now, that requires changing in physician thinking, changing in training. I mean, the only thing that we have not done is send me out to put the pills in their mouth. Okay, but short of that, it's, you know, we have trouble with it.
Okay, I think
there's one other thing I just wanted to mention. Going back to one question that came up earlier that I don't think we addressed, about if the juice is worth the squeeze, I think was the question.
It's not just outcomes. Have we really are we really seeing?
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a couple rates will turn into. So, I mean, if you're getting 80% mammography and 80% pap smears, that's going to turn into, you know, outcomes down the road. There's no question that's going to help you. So you hear those kind of numbers, you know those things will. But
yeah, there's actually been some literature, and I was just going to mention, if you're interested, we're happy to share with you the bibliography of what we came across.
Contact me. I have a paper that specifically addresses. I didn't bring it here because that's too much crap to carry. Anyway, that shows that for the various aspects of quality, safety, there's evidence, certainly beyond just preliminary evidence, that it is effective enough in those kind of areas, that it does improve access. You have to do some non-traditional things. You have to think about it. The referral quality is better. The timeliness and the continuity is better. The error rate is lower. So, I mean, there is some stuff out there specific on medical home, and if you would email me or through them, I will give you the reference for that. That's specifically addresses what's the benefit of medical home.
And we're just beginning, I think, to get to outcomes. We've got some outcomes that we can share with you, but a lot of what we've been learning about outcomes, oddly, is coming from the congressional environment. When Parkland got that, it was coming under Department of Justice court order. And we have learned so much about how to string together an entire coordination of care and then end up with the outcome. And since you've got a confined population, you don't lose track of your public. You know, I mean, it's a high churn situation, but nonetheless, there's enough staying that if you've got a chest pain protocol that you're running, you learn whether that's really working or not. And we found some odd things about what regular medical environments think is working, really isn't, because you have that population that doesn't go anywhere. So we're trying to apply those things that we're learning in the jail to how do we provide medicine across the entirety of Dallas County ED. Because in jail, again, you don't get to say, well, I'm only going to do 45% of the needy. You know, it's mandated 100% needs to have the care you need to get the standard outcome, or you're going to get sued on a civil lawsuit basis. And that makes sense. So it's an exciting prospect, though, to get to the point where we can switch gears now and stop paying as much attention to business and get to the numbers.
Okay, I think we're finally out of time, but I'm sure the speakers would be happy to answer any more questions you might have up here. So I just want to thank them again, and thank you all for coming.
Thank you.